So, I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on one of Alienware's biggest gaming sales of the year? I mean, these are holiday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it before the holidays. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories like the Alienware 32 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So, I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before it's too late.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Oh, when that thumping beat kicks in, you know what time it is. It's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2Ns1T Kanata, and I'm joined as always by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who isn't going to Gamescom, but only because he hates the smell of cologne, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. I'm in Germany, right? I'm covered up. It's crazy.
Hey, I'm in my house in California.
Yeah, man. I know.
Yeah. How are
it's
you?
It's sad. This is one of those episodes where all the big, huge news is going to drop right after we're done recording. We got big press conferences tomorrow from a lot of companies, but that's not going to stop us from doing this show this week.
We got big, and it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk all about that next week. But this week, of course, DLC stands for your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. Oh, but this week it's special because DLC stands for Devendra lending his commentary, because we've got the senior editor, Adventure Beat, and my colleague from the Slash Filmcast, Devendra Hardiwar. Welcome, Devendra.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
We are excited to have you. Devendra and I, of course, do the Slash Filmcast. Hopefully you guys also listen to that as well. And I'm a big fan of his writing on VentureBeat, a gamer and friend. So, we're happy to have you hanging out with us today.
Yes, yeah, and Comic-Con compadre from back
yes.
in the day.
Yeah. Yes, that was absolutely. Fun. Those were the days when I would actually go to things. all right, guys, let's get right into it. Let's start the show as we usually do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important story that happened in the world of gaming this week. Devendra, as our guest, I will let you have first pick. If you're a listener to the show, you can submit stories for us to consider by using the hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week on the Twitters, or use our subreddit. Our subreddit has really been picking up. It's awesome what those guys are doing. Dr. Not So Horrible set it up on Reddit, and everybody has been making it better and better. Now you can upvote things and try to get us to consider your story of the week. So there's a lot of really cool stuff. Check that out at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. All right, Devendra, what is your story of the week contender?
Yeah, I feel kind of bad because it seems like there's one major, huge story that's kind of been dominating the news, I think, for the past week, and that's everything going on with Twitch and mm-hmm. all of the changes and all the new restrictions going on there. It's interesting because so the story now, right, is that Google did buy Twitch. We actually, our games reporter, Dean Takahashi, in VentureBeat's GamesBeat section, actually got the confirmation that this thing happened. But Google still hasn't announced it. Twitch still hasn't announced it. But we're seeing these changes that are very Google-like, right? All these content protection things that Google mm-hmm. implemented on YouTube are coming to Twitch, and people are freaking out, and I can't blame them.
Yeah, they dropped in that content ID software that analyzes music on the archived Twitch videos and just muted people for using copyrighted music. And it sounds like a lot of people were getting false positives, and they were getting a lot of music that was just in-game music or just people talking that was muted. Mm-hmm. And so it frustrated a lot of these guys on Twitch, these real big Twitch accounts. And I think justifiably so, but you also, I guess you can't really fault them for protecting copyright because, as we've seen, you know, you anger these companies, you start making a lot of money on your service, you get the attention of these big companies, then you anger them, and then bad things happen. So it does seem mm-hmm. a little preemptive. How do you feel about this? Do you think it's something they should be doing?
I mean, it just makes a lot of sense because honestly, like I feel a little old, I guess, at this point, or just a little out of touch with the modern gaming culture, because the whole Twitch thing, right? It started a couple of years ago. Everybody started streaming their gaming, and I was just never a part of that, and I was never into that. I loved seeing some people stream things once in a while, like speedruns and stuff, but I'm not one of those, you know, people who just sit there and leave Twitch on in the background to watch or something. I think it's just such a really young subculture of gaming right now that there are going to be a lot of changes, and we're going to see a lot of YouTube-like changes, which is exactly what's happening, right? Remember when YouTube was the Wild West before the Google acquisition, and then they started cracking down and people freaked out? It's inevitable, but I think the gaming community is probably used to less restrictions at this point. So when you bring anything down, right, it's tough. You're going to get pushback.
Yeah, we got a lot of people submitting this story, including at Bajor27, at Siddharth0605, and others on the subreddit. There's been a AMA, an Ask Me Anything, on a Reddit with the Twitch CEO, Emmett Shear. He said that they are not going to be flagging music on streams. It's only on archived stuff. So that's something, I guess. And that they have no intention of flagging music that's in-game. Although you have games like Grand Theft Auto that are problematic because mm-hmm. the in-game music is pop music. It's top 40 hits, you know. It's although the phrase top 40 hits makes me sound like an old, but Christian, what do you stand on this? How do you feel about it?
Hey, actually, Jeff. Hey guys, this is Mark from marketing.
Oh god. We got Mark on the line.
And I hear you guys are saying that's this bad thing for Twitch, but here's what we want to hear you say. Twitch uh-huh. is a great service that allows gamers across the world to share their gaming experiences with other users. It's free and totally fun and great to use, and you can use it straight from your console on the PS4 or Xbox One. What a great service that you're getting for absolutely free. If you want to complain about it, well, you can take your lollipop and you can just get out of the playground. Thanks for using Twitch. Peace out. Have a great day, guys. Live from Germany!
Wow. I thank you, Mr. Edding. That's Mark Edding from marketing and frequent contributor to the show. He never really stays on very very long for any kind of talk back, but we appreciate his contribution. Christian, how do you feel? Are you on the side of Mark?
I think Mark made some good points. I understand users' frustrations, but at the same time, and I don't, maybe we are, it's like we've just aged out of being cool. yeah, just barely, just a bit outside. I don't, why, false positives and yes, and in-game stuff, like for what the service is supposed to be designed for. And if you're getting muted for that, I can understand how that's frustrating. Like you mentioned Grand Theft Auto, or people were even getting things for, I think it was an Uncharted game. I forget the exact example, but you know, like scores, because of course that stuff is copyrighted music as well. But here it is, you know, if you're playing the game and using what it seems like the service is described to be used for, then you're having stuff blocked. You know, that makes it bad for your audience and also just annoying to watch as a Twitch viewer. But like if you're doing a stream and then you're playing, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, the best band in the world, Smash Mouth, in the background. and then, like, that gets muted out. Like, well, yeah, of course. Why would you have that there? Like, and then you're archiving that to put it up somewhere. Like, I've always been, I think copyright law needs to be vastly reformed. And that's a different story and a different, bigger issue. But I support people owning the work that they create, and other people not being able to just use it willy-nilly. Now, if an artist wants to give it away, you know, Radiohead and other bands over the years have put out stuff and said, this is for the people to be used, art is meant to be shared. That's awesome. But if you create something and you don't want it just to be used freely by whomever, whenever, I totally understand that. And I don't think this is a new feeling for me. So I get it. I think the fear here is the fear of change. And then the real fear is, as you guys were saying, you know, false positives and stuff like that, where you're mm-hmm. like, hey, I'm using your service how it should be used. Quit blocking me. But otherwise, I get it. I'm totally okay with it. And I'm sorry to people that disagree. But that's where I'm coming from.
I almost wonder, I think the announcement that they're killing older archive videos, that may be the bigger deal yeah. for people, right? Because they thought that yeah. was there forever. But as we learn on the internet, even with unlimited cloud storage and everything, you know, nothing is really forever. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that is a setup for a tighter implementation between Twitch and YouTube. So it's like, yeah, at Twitch, we won't hang on to your stuff, but maybe we can shuffle it over to YouTube for you so that YouTube can hang on to your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just speculation on my part, but it seems like it could be a good...
to hang on to your stuff. You know, right. Stuff like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, when is it going to just become youtube.com/Twitch, right? And who knows? I'm not business guru executive 101. I mean, that's clearly Mark's job. He's the best guy in marketing, and he's available for your seminars and conferences around the world. Just call him at 1-800-MARK-EDDING from marketing. That's too many numbers, but you'll figure it out. But you know, it seems like kind of a patent buy. YouTube has done live streaming for a while or put their toe in the water. And oftentimes, unless it's a U2 concert, it's been pretty horrible implementation in my experience. Twitch's has been pretty good. I don't see why you wouldn't, you know, right now they're separate, but why in a couple of years you don't roll this into your one big service and Twitch becomes what, a Google Hangout essentially or something like that? Like, to me, that makes sense. I mean, am I right or wrong? Do you guys agree, disagree?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at the silver lining of an announcement like this, it is that they are positioning Twitch to be a big deal for a long time. Not that Twitch isn't already a big deal, it is, but it's nice to see the company going, hey, if we're going to be around for a long, long time, if we're going to continue to ramp up our service and get more mainstream and get broader, we're going to have to be dealing with issues like this. And I think it's encouraging that they're saying, okay, rather than wait until this is a big problem because no one can ignore Twitch, we're going to deal with it now and set a new standard. And then when Twitch becomes as ubiquitous as cable TV, which is what I'm sure they hope, then, you know, we won't have these issues creep up then. So I guess there is kind of a silver lining take on it. No?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. Yeah, you're preparing for the inevitable, or, you know, you're a big company and now part of a bigger company that is a target of lawsuits. And, you know, I really do think it's oftentimes gamers or people that also play games are on the forefront of tech trends and, you know, getting into gadgets and stuff like that and help to some extent build and beta test a service and make it what it is. I mean, Twitch was Justin TV, and now Justin TV is dead, and it's all Twitch, and it's all gaming. And, you know, it's because gamers adopted to it and flocked to it and championed it and, you know, ran that flag up the pole. And then I think it is a little hard, you know, you feel a little betrayed within the thing that you kind of feel, quote unquote, ownership over, because become something that it's not anymore. And I think that's a natural pushback. But I agree with what you're saying, Jeff. Like, if you want to go broad and mainstream, you know, Monday Night Football or whatever, they can't play, again, greatest band in the world, Smash Mouth song during the broadcast without paying, you know, whoever the heck actually owns Smash Mouth music. and I think that's an unfortunate reality of it. But so I understand why people are upset, but I agree with you, you know, almost completely, where it's like, yeah, this has to happen. But the best, the what's the other color than silver? The gold lining, the other lining, the backside of silver is that there's already Hitbox. And the beauty and the beast of the internet is that someone else is like, oh yeah, Twitch is mainstream and corporate. Well, look what I just made. Let's go over here. You know, like, there's always going to be the next thing that's on the gray area of the law where go play in that sandbox.
I think the metaphor for this whole thing, right, is that every new shiny thing like Twitch or whatever, it's like, you know, a bunch of kids just getting in the pool, having fun. And then the acquisition happens and it's adult swim time. And so now we cannot have fun. Now we have to, like, you know, color between the lines. We need to pay attention to the rules. The lawyers are in charge. So it's not as fun, unfortunately. But you know what? That doesn't, whenever this happens, and this happens to everything really on the internet or in business or whatever, everything kind of just falls apart, I guess, or gets worse after they go corporate. You still have your time that you had before that. And you have those memories, guys. So that's something. You know, you have those. Like the Dreamcast. The Dreamcast is all great memories for me. You know, even though it died in ignominious death. Yeah.
All your memory, you have all those memories until we delete them from our servers.
Or from your memory banks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that'll happen soon.
It's a great metaphor, though. I love it. It's like the kids that start the lemonade stand, and the adults are like, wait, how much money did you make on the lemonade stand? Yeah, we'll be taking that over now. We're not selling lemonade anymore. Christian, what is your pick for story of the week?
So my pick for story of the week is insert big thing that broke from Gamescom here when this podcast has a day later. Can you believe that? That was crazy. I can't believe
no cheating.
Insert big thing from
no
Gamescom.
Cheating, right? Spicer.
Actually, it is interesting with Gamescom, you know, happening. I think there still was some fun and interesting news. So I'm torn. I'll dive into one. There's a lot of stories we can get into. But in the, news department is Evolve is delayed until 2015. And I feel like this had to have been a budgetary or get out of the way kind of, like, we looked at what target sales could be and we think February is a better month. I mean, because this game.
No way. You think so? Are you being facetious?
No, I'm being 100% serious. I mean, this game was ready to go. This game was cooked in the oven. They took it out. It was paraded around E3 like little Miss and Mr. Hot to Trot, and it was ready to go. And when every other game was
E3 game of the show, it won from the Game Journalist Award.
Yeah, exactly. And when every other game was 2015, I don't know when you were over there, but when I was there, they were touting and like, and we're this year, and it was, you know, it was a big thing. And now they're like February 2015, and you don't think it was a marketing slash budget?
I mean, if only we could get someone on the line who would know about that. But the idea, I think, is that now February is the new November. February is more crowded than the holiday season is this year. February is insane with releases now. I think this game would have done far better if it came out in the holiday season. And I think the only reason it got delayed is because it isn't ready. I would be surprised if I don't know.
Are they what seemed unready to you guys? I mean, I don't know. Like,
well, we don't
maybe
know.
Maybe they're adding more content because it seemed like kind of a bare bones game, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to make online games that work super well and are balanced and all that stuff. I think those kinds of games are hard to make. And of course, they're not going to show you the stuff that's not ready. <you know? laughs> What's your take on this, Devendra?
I mean, I hope I always try to look for the good in this. So I hope like maybe they're taking a little more time and I don't know, trying to do something that's just not another Left 4 Dead, you know, like giving us something that's truly different. But yeah, we have no clue. I'm almost wondering if there's like a lack of faith in the next gen consoles for this holiday season. Right. I wonder if these later releases, you know, oh, people will actually have consoles in their living rooms at that point rather than betting on the, you know, who knows who ends up buying what during the holiday season. If you release it next year, you kind of have a little more of a stable release. You can tell your investors like how much you actually expect to sell and stuff.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. Even though by all accounts the PS4 and Xbox One are selling way better than their last generation counterparts did over the same period since release, they, you know, I think nobody would have asked for better sales for those consoles. And yet the rising cost of creating these AAA games means that even those larger install bases aren't enough to recoup your costs or to make a really super successful game that is exclusive to the new consoles. And that's a little scary. I mean, we saw this announcement this week of Assassin's Creed Rogue, which was submitted on the subreddit by Science Faith. Mm-hmm. And here's a game that is a new standalone last-gen game coming out for this holiday season alongside Assassin's Creed Unity, which is the next-gen version. So, you know, at least Ubisoft is saying, well, we need actual IP that is catering to people that already have consoles. That I think that's a little scary, too.
Yeah, isn't that? That's like a... I don't think, has that been done before? Like so long into the life cycle of a new console, has there been a flagship release on an older console? I'm sure there have, but I just can't remember any.
Well, I certainly can't remember anything where it's like, hey, we've got the sequel to this game coming out on the next gen, and we also have a different sequel coming out on last gen. You know, it's very strange. It's like it's a completely different game made just for you guys that don't want the new consoles.
Yeah. And by the way, the consoles aren't backwards compatible, so you need to still have both hooked up in your living room. Like that's kind of strange. Yeah.
It's very, very odd. But yeah, I think that's what we're seeing is that there just isn't the ability for these games to recoup, and maybe waiting until next year could help that in a little in some respect, that they want the holiday sales of the consoles to pick up. But I truly feel like Evolve would have come out this year if it was ready. That's just my instinct on it.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm gonna plant that flag and say nope. I'm also gonna go further and say it doesn't matter when Evolve comes out. It won't hit the original projections for what 2K would consider a hit.
I don't understand why you're so down on this game. It's winning all these awards. Everybody seems to be hyped about it.
I'm not down on the game. I'm talking about sales realizations versus, you know, reviews or expectations. I think that's the difference. Is I think oftentimes as gamers we get lost in the world that we're in, you know, or that, you know, we let the choo-choo hype train come and take us away with it. And these games are super expensive to make, like you were just saying, and what sales expectations are, and you know, and I think oftentimes companies maybe have unrealistic expectations. And when a game like Tomb Raider, you know, you loved that game, comes out and doesn't meet sales expectations, Square sales expectations, or maybe it's all these companies are just smoking crack or something, because like you look at what Capcom sales expectations were for, was it Lost Planet, whatever, mind blanking.
Three.
But like three. And it's just like, it didn't meet their projection. Well, of course it didn't. Did anyone really think it would do that? And they put all these they put all this money in it and parade it around and do a couple of advertising campaigns. And it doesn't, you know, there's one Call of Duty, there's one Grand Theft Auto, like Darksiders 2, then it meet its sales expectations. Really? The game that was a late to the party, like critical success, and then had a cult following, so they made a sequel, wasn't all of a sudden a mainstream hit? No kidding. Of course it wasn't. Like, I don't know what companies expect, and they keep dumping money into it and thinking that this thing they'll have the new big hit. And, you know, there's one Assassin's Creed, and occasionally a new IP can come in and crack into that. But, you know, I don't think Evolve will be it. And I don't think a lot of these other games will be it. And I don't think that means don't make them, but just maybe cut back on costs or don't make them as big and expensive as they're otherwise going to be, because I don't understand how I feel like sometimes I'm the only sane person looking at this crap. And maybe maybe I'm the idiot and everyone's yelling at me like, no, Christian, you're so wrong. We're going to do great. But I feel like time and time again, everybody on the corporate side is drinking this Kool-Aid and then they're all sad and disappointed and they have to adjust their profits down for the quarter. And it's like, no kidding. Of course you did. Are you crazy?
Well, I think what will be really interesting is to see which of the Assassin's Creed that comes out this year sells better. If Rogue outsells Unity, that will be very interesting to me. You know?
Yeah. I wonder if the MP, I mean, they're separate SKUs, right? So the MPD will break them out. It won't be just Assassin's Creed. Like, you know,
they're completely different games.
Yeah. So
yeah, completely different games.
Yeah.
With different protagonists, different storylines. It's a completely different game.
Yeah.
I would say I side with Devendra on the Twitch is a pretty big story and it was submitted by a lot of people, but I have to say my favorite story of this week, you know, as much as Gamescom is going to dominate the video game news next week, we also have Gen Con coming up next week, which is at the end of next week, which is the pretty much the biggest board gaming convention in this country. And there will be a lot of announcements, but one of the biggest board gaming companies jumped the line and announced some stuff earlier than Gen Con, and that is Fantasy Flight. Fantasy Flight announced two big board games that were submitted by a bunch of people this week to me, including at Anakin OU and at Cygrex. And I think both of them sound very exciting. The first is a board game version of XCOM, which is the fun 2K old game that was remade recently and now is on iOS and was a big hit last year or the year before on PC. But the board game version sounds really interesting. It's a co-op board game, meaning you and up to three of your buddies against the game on the same team, not playing against each other. And you all play different roles in trying to stop the alien invasion. And one of the roles is managing this app that is required. It's a free download app for Android or iOS. And it is required for you to play the game. So it integrates tabletop, board gaming, cardboard, and moving bits around on a board. But you have to also use this app as a way to, it like randomizes certain things. You'll have like a little mini game on the app that you have to play when you get certain information, when you're like scanning the galaxy for information, you have to decipher, there'll be scrambled on the app and you have to decipher it. Sounds like a really cool way of integrating really modern digital game styles with an old school tabletop approach. I'm really excited about this. Have you guys looked into it at all?
I haven't
seen much on this. Sorry.
Well, check it out, Jeff. This game looks really, really cool. I'm excited to see more on it. I was a fan of the XCOM board game. It's a turn-based game I was a fan of the computer game, I should say. It was a turn-based game in its digital form. And so I think it fits very well as a board game, but it really doesn't play like the board game. Keep doing that. It doesn't play like the video game. Anyway, the other big Fantasy Flight announcement pre-Gen Con is a game that looks just gorgeous. It's called Star Wars Armada. Now, Fantasy Flight has been making X-Wing game, X-Wing Tactics, I think it's called. Can't remember the name of it. Anyway, beautiful miniatures. Fantasy Flight is really known for high quality components, gorgeous miniatures. The sort of more expensive, higher end games that you'll find are what they're best at. And this X-Wing miniatures game has been really cool. It has they do an accurate scale of the miniatures. So an X-Wing is a certain scale, and then if you get a Star Destroyer, it's much bigger because it sticks in that scale. But this Armada takes a lot of the same mechanics, adds some new ones, and really has you play as an admiral commanding much larger fleets than an X-Wing. So some people are worried that it will overtake X-Wing because in the same way it's a two-player game, it's using a lot of the same mechanics. So they're worried about bifurcating the market for these two franchises. But man, if you guys have seen the pictures of this game, it's gorgeous. It's got this really interesting snake-looking device that it comes with that lets you determine the moves that you can make. It's got this little bendy plastic thing that lets you, you know, kind of plot out your movements of all your ships. Super cool. I'm very excited for both of these games and even more excited for what, if this is pre-Gen Con, what Gen Con has in store for all of us as well. But that was not the end of the news this week. No, we got a lot of other stuff submitted by people, stuff that's going on. One of the things I'm most interested in for Gamescom is this tease that Activision has been doing of the return of the Sierra brand. I grew up with Sierra games. I'm sure you guys did too. King's Quest, Police Quest, Space Quest, all those point-and-click adventure games. And they were sort of the beginning of you know, huge, big-budget AAA, full-color games on the PC back in the day. And this brand has been dormant for a long time. It's been bandied about by different publishers owning it. And evidently, Activision got it in the Vivendi trade. And it looks like they're bringing it back. They have a website. They have a new version of the logo out. Devinja, are you excited about this idea?
Well, it's tough, right? Because I grew up, I had a PC, but it was a really crappy PC. So I couldn't really play many games on it. I remember the original Wolfenstein. I remember the Journeyman Project games. Those were cool. But I was always a console guy. So I would see these Sierra games. And I would kind of covet them, but I just never be able to play them. So I don't know. Maybe with the brand coming back, we'd be able to see something new. And I don't know. Maybe I can have a taste of what I missed.
Yeah. What do you think, Christian?
This fall, from the company that brought you Call of Duty, Call of Duty 2, Call of Duty 3, Call of Duty 4, Call of comes Space Quest. We're back, guys. Man, I loved. Yeah, all the Sierra games were great. 20 discs, you know, pop them in and out. Nice big meaty instruction book.
My dad forced me to copy all of the discs before, as a backup, before I installed the game. I was forced 14.
Oh, he's so smart. That's amazing.
14 yeah. discs. You copy them and then you copy protect the originals.
That's smart. Yeah, no, I was just like, here we go. And then inevitably you'd lose a disc at some point because it was three boys in a house and we'd be crazy. I understand they're more elegant game when it was more pointing and clicking, but I preferred, was it the change at King's Quest 2 maybe? When you were actually typing like direct command in for everybody versus selecting text dialogues.
Actually, I have it backwards. It started that way and then moved away from text. It's the original King's Quests were like the next evolution of text adventures. And then
right, that's what I'm saying. That's I think that's what I said. At like King's Quest 2, it changed to where you selected.
Oh, right.
Or whatever it was. Right. But I like that. I just had fun going and being a thief and going into the Thieves Guild and just typing funny things. And then I was amazed at the things that, you know, the amount of unique phrases they would come back to you with before eventually they would just be like, I'm sorry. And I'd be like, oh, move on to the next guy. Let's type some more crap. I am curious what this is, though, because this falls in the other. And someone, I think it was Lawman in the chat, was giving me a hard time. Like, it's easy to say nothing will sell well. Yes, good point. But I think these Sierra games, you know, slow your roll, manage your expectations. Like, I don't think King's Quest, whatever they're on now, you know, 15 or whatever comes out and is a runaway blockbuster, huge success. I think these games have a niche audience and if made well can be tons of fun. But I think gaming has largely moved away from that style of gameplay in a big, you know, in a mass appeal. And I think even, you know, with The Walking
Telltale.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've seen them kind of move from that. Sam and Max were very much the evolution of those, or the carrying the torch of those old Sierra games. And now their games are much more decision trees, right? Like, let's play in the gray area and much less adventuring, pointing, and clicking. But I'm
always excited. Let me ask you that question. Would you guys want these Sierra games to be an authentic version of what they used to be? Or do you think that bringing Sierra back could mean taking these IP and bringing them into the future and saying, okay, well, it can either be sort of a half step away from it, sort of like Telltale evolving what the adventure game was, or maybe it's a Space Quest FPS.
Mm-hmm. Well,
heaven
I mean,
forbid.
What I'd love to see is Space Quest Skyrim, like that type of world with, you know, Space Quest humor in it or King's Quest humor in it. And you have this vast world to explore in and take it more of the RPG route. Because while these were an evolution of text, you know, adventure games, they were also very much early stage RPGs, right? Where you could...
Well, certainly Quest for Glory was that.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Lawman.
And I'd like to see that that continue. But of course, I think the way that would get me excited would be less the remastered of these games and more something new and awesome I didn't know I wanted that just blows me away. Like, that's always more fun. Like, I went back to Monkey Island when they did the remastered version of that on the iPad, and it was gorgeous and pretty, and I played it about halfway through, and then I was kind of like, oh yeah, I remember this game, and I was done with it. So I always think, you know, kind of like you, Jeff, shiny, new, amazing is better than, you know, here's the same thing again. Hopefully there are wonderfully creative people that are going to put something out that just blows my mind. That'd be the best of both worlds.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. Like, if you're going to do, especially if you're going to revive a classic brand like this, right, you got to do something new. Otherwise, it's just laziness, you know, why even bother? And I honestly, it's good that you guys brought up the Telltale things, because I would love to see sort of like a combination between these Sierra games and what Telltale's been doing. And I think there are quite a few ways that you could, you know, combine the two or evolve the two together and get something new and interesting. I'd love to see that for sure. And maybe Telltale could learn a thing or two as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. It's cool that Telltale seems to have proven that adventure games can work. And so, you know, Activision's like, oh, wait, adventure games can work? Don't we own this company that used to be the synonymous with adventure games? Maybe we should bring them back. I'm very excited to see what that announcement shows. I'm also very excited to talk about our sponsor, Squarespace. I'm a huge fan of Squarespace. I use Squarespace, have done for many years now. My personal website, jeffcanada.com, was built on Squarespace, is housed on Squarespace. I update it using Squarespace, and I love it. The thing I love most about it is how easy it is. It's a great service. If you're looking to create a website for any reason, really, if you have a portfolio that you want to make, if you want to start a store, an online store, or you have any kind of blog you want to do, Squarespace allows you to create really beautiful, really unique websites. They have so many templates to start, hundreds of templates to start with, and then their drag and drop design, their WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, easy design features let you take those templates and mess with them and make them your own in really elegant, simple ways. It's beautiful. It's easy. They have 24/7 support through live chat and email that is very responsive. I've used it myself. I really have. I've been like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this. Or this is confusing. Or you know what? I need an idea for something. They're very responsive and super helpful. And it lets you create something that doesn't look like every other cookie cutter website out there, but looks awesome and elegant. Very, very cool. And if you want to do an online store, commerce is super easy with Squarespace because every site comes with an online store capability built in. You don't have to use it if you don't need to, but it's right there. You just drag it right into your website, and all of a sudden, you're able to take transactions. It's awesome. Plans start at only $8 a month, so it's inexpensive. And that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Also, we'll hook you up with an extra 10% off your first purchase if you use our promo code. And that is Jeff Sent Me. JeffSentMe. Jeff Sent Me. So go to squarespace.com. And I think it's squarespace.com/DLC. Although it doesn't say that right here. As long as you use our promo code, that's the important part. So go to squarespace.com, check it out. You don't have to put in any credit card to check out their service. They have a for free try before you buy plan. You can really build out your entire website, make sure you like it, make sure it works how you want it before it goes live, all for absolutely free without even having to put in your credit card. And then if you do decide to buy it, use that promo code Jeff Sent Me. And we'll get you 10% off your order, and you show support for our show and encourage them to continue sponsoring. We really appreciate Squarespace. I'm a huge fan of their service. As I said, I've been using it for years and really love it. So check that out, squarespace.com, that promo code Jeff Sent Me. All right, guys, back to the news. There's some other interesting stuff. This one's submitted on subreddit by Centorio. So Nintendo's indie liaison, this guy named Dan Adelman, he lost his job recently. He said some stuff on Twitter that Nintendo was not a fan of. And after he got laid off, he went on to ask.fm and fielded questions from people. He's like, you know what? I'm going to just kind of spill the beans. People are asking about the Wii U's sales, and he said basically that the Wii U name is their biggest problem, or one of their biggest problems. And I'm curious what you guys think of this. He said that basically the fact that it was called Wii U cut their sales in half. Davinder, do you think that's BS, or do you think that has some validity?
I think including a useless tablet probably hurt their sales quite a bit. I think, yeah. You know, come on, guys. Like, if Nintendo can survive releasing a console called the Wii, I think they could survive the Wii U. Like, at that point, you can't. The Wii, by the way, one of the most successful consoles ever made. You can't make that argument. The Wii U didn't sell because they didn't know what the heck to do with that tablet. And I actually bought one just ahead of Mario Kart. And I love playing Mario Kart and love playing the first party games. But it's no question why that thing failed. It's because they didn't leverage the tablet, and it really didn't need the tablet for that reason.
This is my favorite part of the show. It's called Christian Disagrees with Our Guests. Yeah.
I thought it was gonna be Christian Craps on Nintendo.
Yeah, from what I remember, Christian, I thought you would actually totally agree with what I was saying.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Me too.
Well, I agree that they haven't justified time and time again. The problem with the tablet is it tries to do two things and it does neither very well. Well, it could, off-screen play works pretty well, but not at a great, super far distance, depending on your house. You know, they needed to decide what the thing was going to be, unique gameplay elements a la a DS type approach to the main screen, or it's just going to be off-screen play because you can't have both in one game. But the Wii U name brand, I don't know if it necessarily cut their sales in half, but then again, the Wii U hasn't sold much, so half of nothing is still nothing. Hey-o, sick burn.
Christian Craps on Nintendo!
but I think the name is horrible, and I do think it affected sales. I mean, just in layman talk and overhearing at, you know, one of my many visits to my local Target or Best Buy, people not knowing what it is and not knowing that it's a new system and not knowing that it's a totally new console. And oftentimes in this discussion, people bring up the Super Nintendo. You know, well, they had the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and that's basically the same thing. They just put a letter, because, you know, SNES, on the old abbreviation, and except that there's something totally different between when one is called the Nintendo and one is called the Super Nintendo, i.e. the better Nintendo, right? Like, buy this new awesome thing versus the Wii and the Wii U. What the heck? What is that? And yeah, you can name anything and sell it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, It doesn't matter what it is. A Tesla. What? Okay, great. That's a guy, and his ideas didn't work. But now we have a company, and his things work, and their cars that are real expensive. And okay, great. A Prius. What the heck is? It looks like an egg, and it's weird. And what? I don't know. It sells. A Wii. What is? It doesn't. It sells. An iPod. An iPad. Are you kidding me? Everyone's like, that's the dumbest name ever. I want 20. But the problem is when you call it the Wii U. And then agreeing with you now, you're welcome, is that they didn't have the marketing to really back it up and differentiate it as this is this new thing. It was this weird half step with the name and the weird half step with the marketing and branding, because they were like, it's a brand new console. But P.S., half the games, you're still going to need the old console's remotes that we're not giving you with this console, but you got to keep them because that's how you play it for the best experience. But also, look at this new tablet. But really, it doesn't do much. And it's the Wii U because it's for you. What? Super Wii would have been great. Vita, call it the Vita. Actually, that doesn't sell either. But I think the naming thing is weird. Jeff, be the tiebreaker and tell me I'm right, or I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Well,
on Nintendo.
I think that what you guys have both said is that there's been a lot of problems with the Wii U, of which the name is a part. I mean, I don't know if, I guess Super Wii would have been better, but I feel like you're right in the sense that tying it, the messaging of it being an upgrade to your Wii rather than its own new console never really worked, and I think was wrongheaded.
Yeah.
But I also agree, and to be fair, Dan Adelman also wrote, you know, mentioned that the gamepad hasn't been justified. I think really honestly, Davinder is the one who's most correct here. It didn't matter what it was called. If its main feature had been whiz bang amazing, everybody wouldn't have cared what it was called. You know, it didn't matter if it was like, oh my God, I have to have my waggle, you know, like in the Wii, everybody was like, oh, I've never played games like this. And it sold like gangbusters. And if they had shown a way you've never played games like this, it would have sold like gangbusters, mm-hmm. no matter I what mean, it was called.
It is probably tough to expect that much from Nintendo, right? After you can think of like how much Nintendo has gone against the grain of the industry, right? With the Nintendo 64, you know, sticking with cartridges and that weird remote with the GameCube and that also weird remote in mini disc type things. Like Nintendo has like always pushed to be a little different. And I think the Wii, maybe just through the luck of things and by being cheap and using old hardware, they managed to find something that was successful. You know, but it's hard to expect them to have lightning strike twice, I guess. What you brought up, Christian, the idea that, it's a halfway upgrade. You can use your Wiimotes. You can play all your older games. You can use a ton of other Wii accessories on the Wii U. It was confusing all the way down. And the name, I think, it you know, maybe 10% of the confusion. But the other confusion is just that you go into a store, you look at this thing, and all the accessories are together. All the games are together. There's no clear differentiation. The colors are so similar. Like, there's nothing really symbolizing this is so different and better and you must have it.
I think the biggest
story here though is guy gets laid off or you know asked to leave Nintendo, walks across bridge, lights match, throws it over shoulder.
That's very true.
Watches it burn. His tweet was pretty epic, like when he, because like, originally he had tweeted some things saying, you know, bad mouthing some Nintendo policies or being critical of, I guess, is the more appropriate. And then he was kind of told not to tweet anymore. And then he tweeted when he was no longer at Nintendo. And it was, I'm paraphrasing, but like came to an agreement allowing me to tweet, came to an agreement with Nintendo that allows me to tweet, I no longer work for Nintendo. Like, that's a pretty sweet tweet.
Another story I noticed that you put in here, Christian, that we just got confirmation that your beta characters from the beta of Destiny are not transferring to the full game. I don't think that surprises anybody. It's a
just bit like every beta ever. Yeah.
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 Not surprising, but I mean, I thought we should bring it up. Davinja, did you have any further thoughts?
I loved playing the Destiny beta, and I think for every beta I've participated in, I've just kind of gotten used to that fact. You know, it's a nice little experience, and it'll be interesting to see how it's different in the full game. But yeah, I don't mind losing my beta character.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we all leveled faster in the beta than we will in the full version of the game. That's just my hunch, because you know, a day of playing and I was level 8. So, I have a feeling the game isn't going to ramp up quite that quickly, but I could be wrong. Christian, you put this in the show notes. Did you have any other feelings?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a kind of no kidding, but I did start a petition on change.org to make Bungie make sure our beta characters can carry over. And it's hashtag bring back the beta. Join the conversation at hashtag bring back the beta. No, I mean, I think the interesting side of it is they kind of, well, it was a, they gave enough details without being super specific. And the article I read was over at IGN, and they had information from Bungie designer Tyson Green. And it was just, they gave explanation for why. Sometimes it's just like, yeah, of course it's a beta. It's not going to carry over. And they just kind of outlined that things changed in the final build of the game. So you couldn't bring over this character. There are some new weapons. The way you earn experience has been adjusted up and down, like you had mentioned, Jeff. And so there wasn't, you know, Tyson said there wasn't a single reason why you couldn't carry it over, but there's been enough little changes that it just, I don't know if it wouldn't break the game per se, but it's a different experience now. The way you level and the items you get are different, so it makes sense that you go in and start fresh. So I think that's interesting. I always like when they give a reason, because oftentimes it's just like, we're doing this, and then move on. And I thought it was nice that they provided a little insight into, you know, some of the changes that they're toying around with.
Awesome. Well, that pretty much does it for our story of the week. Let's get right to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. If you are listening live, as we do the show every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, you're welcome to call in and share your playlist with us or any other thoughts and feelings you might have. That number is 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. Defindra, what's on your playlist?
It's probably not as good or interesting as you guys. I finished Watch Dogs like a month ago, and I actually haven't had a platform to talk about how disappointed I am in that game. So here, I'll do it here.
This is the part of the show where Christian will likely agree with our guest.
I just felt really, I think from the very opening scene of Watch Dogs, I realized, oh my God, this is not going to be good, because I saw the demo.
20 more hours of it.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I know exactly what's going to happen now. 2 years ago, right, we saw that awesome demo at E3, you know, the great next-gen demo. The consoles weren't even announced yet. It just looked so next-gen, looked so different and interesting, and there was so much detail in the world. And, the game ships, it's here, and it is not that. It does not look that interesting. Actually, I think only looks, maybe a little bit better than Grand Theft Auto V, it's higher resolution and everything. And there's probably a little more characters and more detail in the world. But I was disappointed just by the way the game actually looked, but also the storytelling was just terrible. And I don't know, that just made me really depressed, because I felt like we're in an age where games can tell good stories, and we've seen that done many, many times. Telltale's been doing great stuff with The Walking Dead, especially season one. Thinking of The Last of Us, which was, I think, phenomenal. And, they're making a movie of that, but I don't even know if the movie's going to be able to capture what that narrative was able to do, because you were actually playing it. And meanwhile, there's Watch Dogs, which starts with, like, the most cliched, person you love getting hurt thing, character on a revenge spree. This guy's basically Batman with hacking capabilities. It's always sad to me when the main story of a game is the least interesting thing about it, because I had a lot of fun. Like, actually playing the multiplayer stuff in Watch Dogs was a ton of fun. I'm not sure if you guys did much of that, but just walking around hacking people in secret, it's sort of like a game of digital tag, and I had a ton of fun doing that. Some of the mini games were nice, but it was just so sad that the actual story, the actual game itself, was just not that interesting. And especially after the had a lengthy delay, right? Was it 6 months or significant? Yeah. After a long delay, I expected something better. So, have to say, really disappointing Watch Dogs, but that's just me. I think the only thing I've really been jumping on to play recently is Walking Dead Season 2, which I'm really interested in where it's going, and I think Telltale's done an amazing job. But I can understand, I've seen some of the criticism of it too. Like, I think people are getting a little tired of what they're doing. I played the Fables game as well, and that was interesting, but nowhere near as good as The Walking Dead Season 1. So, with all this other stuff they have coming out, I really wonder if they're going to be able to keep the quality up, because I think, Walking Dead Season 1, that showed that they understood good storytelling, and we need more of that in games, and we need less, fewer things like Watch Dogs, which had some great writers attached to it, yet somehow was still kind of a mess narratively.
Now, I'm curious, sorry, Christian, real quick, I'm curious, Devendra, what kept you playing, even when you weren't, are you one of those people that just kind of wants to finish it if you invested the time to start it?
Usually I do. But also, it was, I think Watch Dogs, of all the new next-gen games, right? Watch Dogs was the one that represented next-gen to me. When the Xbox One was announced, I was like, all right, I cannot wait to pre-order Watch Dogs. Once they announced the pre-orders, like 6 months, before the game actually came out, I had my order locked in. I was ready to go. Maybe I put too much, I put Watch Dogs up on a pedestal of next-gen gaming or something. Maybe it was just too early to have a next-gen game that was actually doing something new and interesting. I finished it just because I still had a lot of fun playing the multiplayer. I did want to see it through all the way to the end. And it's like a movie, too. Like, I do try to finish things most of the time, unless it's just god-awful.
Interesting. Christian, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point about storytelling, too, I've talked about on this show how the traditional open world game, I feel like, is less my jam now than it was before. But it's also frustrating when a game like Watch Dogs comes out, even though Ubi does have a reputation for having their first game be horrible, and then they make the second one a pretty fun game.
Yeah.
Red Dead, I think, is the game that I hold as an example of open world games can have a good story. And some people complain about Mexico being too long and lost. I didn't have a problem with that part of the game. I think I I liked it. I liked that change of pace, and I liked that it was, well, the whole game is in the West, that, you know, Mexico, in that game you had the military, and then you had even more wilderness, and I kind of liked that difference and the little bit of the change of pace in the game, and I don't have a problem with it. But I think the story of that game was phenomenal and great and emotional, and it took you for the journey. And then that, whatever it is, 5-7 years later, however long it's been, that we still see games like Watch Dogs that are just lost or uninspired, I guess, is maybe the better way to describe it. And it's frustrating because you'd hope that, and while I did not enjoy Grand Theft Auto V's story, I think that they did try to, they were ambitious with it, with the three separate characters that, you know, they interwove and came together and did the heist. I do think that they were trying to do something cool and new and exciting. And any time that something else comes along that doesn't do that, it's, you know, it's Paula Abdul, two steps forward, one step back. And it's, you know, opposites attract. Copyright TM, nice, Paula Abdul.
Nice little contemporary reference for the kids.
For sure.
Well, we're talking about Watch Dogs and Red Dead, so I can make old references.
Okay. By the way, Red Dead, yeah, I think is the I think the pinnacle of what open world narratives in gaming can be, because that game all the way through, like, it meant something. Your character had really great motivations. Like, you knew exactly what was going on, and the ending of that game will break your heart, unless your heart is made of stone or something. You know, that game, like, just succeeded on every level. And Grand Theft Auto V, totally give it credit for trying, even though I think GTA 4 actually had a much stronger narrative, and the DLC for GTA 4, which I haven't really heard too many people talk about, but I love those side stories. Like, they really did something interesting with that world, but we did not see that in GTA 5 for some reason, although they at least tried to be different.
Yeah, I think Gay Tony is the best GTA game of last gen.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
And yeah, and then whatever the biker one was called was good too, but
Boston the Damned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was as good as Gay Tony. Gay Tony was really smart. And then to your point about the Telltale games, to me, and I've talked about this on this show before as well, to me, I think season 2 is an example of, oh yeah, not even, it's not necessarily the style of game that means you'll have a good story or not. It's just sometimes games have good stories and sometimes they don't. I found season 2 of The Walking Dead to be a very mediocre story at best, where, you know, speaking in broad paintbrushes and overgeneralizations here, not to spoil anything, but, you know, it's like Walking Dead season 2 writer's manual. Here you go. Introduce new character. Have new character do something nice to your character. Kill new character. Introduce new character. Have new character do something mean to your character. Have that character be killed by nice character. Have nice character then be killed by... And it's just... I feel like they forgot everything that worked in season 1, where you built this relationship and you felt something, and you had this group of people that you were going through the, you know, the mud with, and you were slopping it out, and you were, it was exhausting. And in season 2, I feel like it's very much the TV movie version of season 1, if that makes sense. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
In your two games, where it's one is a story game, right? And the other is an open world game. But I think it just illustrates the fact that we need to celebrate good story when we see it in any type of game, because apparently it's not the easiest thing to do. And I'm sure, you know, there's a chance that that The Last of Us 2, if or when it comes out, won't have as good of a story as The Last of Us 1. It's not just because it's a single player narrative focused game. That's not why the story is good. It's just because it's a game with a great story, if that makes sense.
We got a lot of folks on the line here. I want to see what everybody else has been playing. I got somebody on the line from the 480 area code, who is evidently in a windstorm.
Hey, how's it going?
What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
I'm Hugo, calling from the Irvine area. And the game I've been playing the most, even though I got The Last of Us Remastered and I love it, but I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV, The Realm Reborn, and still loving it. Since it came out.
That's awesome. Tell me why you have selected that MMO over others, and what keeps you coming back for more.
Well, I played Final Fantasy XI back, I think 2003 whenever it came out, and I loved that game. Eventually got tired of it and tried a little bit of WoW, but WoW really wasn't my flavor. And I really didn't play any MMOs up until 14 came out. And when 14 came out, everyone told me it was like WoW, and I never really got into WoW, so I guess I'm just now getting into the crack that everybody else had with WoW. I don't know.
Yeah, Devendra, you're a big anime fan, I know. Are you more drawn to games that have an anime visual style than a more Western visual style?
I thought about that because I didn't grow up playing PC games, and I think that was a big thing, right? And pretty much all the PC games had Western style art and everything. I grew up watching anime and playing console games, which was, you know, mostly came from Japanese companies. So I know that aesthetic just really works for me. The way sprites look in general, but I think for me, anime aesthetic just works better with what I like. Although I think now we're seeing companies just taking really interesting new designs and doing interesting things with it. I think before, like in the 16-bit and 32-bit era, we were seeing better designs from anime style artists. You know, you look at the stuff Amano was doing for Final Fantasy, and you know, how that was changed for the actual games was always far more interesting visually to me than any Western RPG.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, as much as I love MMOs and go from MMO to MMO, I played a lot of Final Fantasy 14 right after it was rebooted, and everybody was saying it was great again. And I liked it a lot. I think I'm inherently more drawn to so much of what makes an MMO satisfying for me is upgrading my character, getting new gear for my character, looking cool. And I just don't think that I'm as drawn to the gear designs of the Eastern style. Although I have to say, I loved Terra. Terra had incredible graphics and really cool gear, and I loved that game. So it's not as broad a sweeping feeling that I have, but I just, for some reason, I'm not particularly drawn to Final Fantasy 14, and mostly because of its aesthetic, I think.
Did you play 11, by the way? Because that had I think that was a little more Western than 14.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I never got into 11 either.
11 was interesting. I played that a little during college. I was never really into MMOs, but that was a really interesting combination or cross between like Western style and Square's typical style. I'm thinking too of like something that's very anime, like Phantasy Star Online. Like that is super anime, super robots, really interesting lines and art there. I really love that game. Yeah.
I love that. I don't know why that game hasn't been rebooted.
Well, they're working on Phantasy Star Online 2, right? Which is,
but I think it's only for Japan. Like they have no intention of bringing it to the States.
Man. That's depressing. Because I remember when that news was announced that they were working on it. I just didn't know it was not coming here.
Yeah,
so sad.
I could be wrong about that. In chat room, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what I heard.
Announced at Gamescom, a release date for it.
Yeah, well, that would be great. I'd be all in favor of that. Let's do another call. I have somebody on the line from 607 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey guys, my name is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Since it's kind of in a little bit of a low time here, I've kind of dipped my toe into some free-to-play games. Like I've been playing War Thunder quite a bit. That seems actually really fun. And the control scheme for piloting an airplane with your mouse is really intuitive. Great. Gave Hawken a try. While the gameplay, that's pretty fun, it definitely is kind of riddled with a lot of the tropes of free-to-play games. Real money advertisements are all over the thing, but mm-hmm. if you can get past that, the gameplay is kind of fun. And hopefully shortly, I missed out on the most recent episode of Kentucky Route Zero, and I've heard really good things about that, and I'd like to be able to get that done fairly soon.
Tell me a little more about War Thunder. It's not a game I'm that familiar with. Is it a realistic airplane dogfighting? Is that the idea?
Yeah, so it's in the same vein as something like World of Warplanes and World of Tanks. They've maybe in the past couple of months or so have just introduced tanks into the game as well. So you can play, you know, whole different kind of tanks. But it's, you know, kind of World War II airplanes and, you know, kind of the team deathmatch and defend your base type objectives and stuff. And it's an extremely pretty game. Like for some free to play, it definitely looks very nice.
Very cool. Kentucky Route Zero is one of those games that is still on my pile of shame. Everybody has told me I need to play it, and I just haven't done so. But I've been playing some free to play stuff. I talked a little bit about this recently. I'm still hooked on the alpha for Heroes of the Storm. and having tons of fun with that game. And I know every time I say this, everybody goes, graduate to League or graduate to Dota, dude. Stop messing around. But I have to say, I really love Heroes. I'm such a Blizzard fanboy. I think I've put more hours into Blizzard company games than any other company's games in my life. And so having that bleed over, having that company-wide universe mind for its IP is really fun. They have some really cool hooks, you know, the fact that I don't have to feel like the low man on the totem pole on my team if I'm, you know, the lowest level because my entire team levels it together. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I find it to be refreshing as a newbie to MOBAs. And as I play more and more of this game, I do feel like I'm getting better. I played with Alex last night and we went on a 5-0 run. That felt really good because when I first started playing this game, I was losing over and over and over again. And I really do feel like I'm getting characters that I like. I'm digging this guy, Muradin. He's awesome. And I'm finding, and the fact that you level up individual characters in Heroes is cool. I'm not sure if League or Dota work like that because I haven't really played them. But you know, maybe I will graduate on to more MOBAs, but I'm having a blast playing this game. I'm getting that competitive itch. I want to jump on the fact that these games are quick. I think they're quicker than other MOBAs, generally speaking, and we can get one done in like 20 minutes to half an hour. That goes a long way in letting me feel like, oh, I can just pop this on and play a quick round or two. It's a lot of fun, and I hope that game comes out to the masses quickly because I'd love to get more buddies into it that don't have alpha keys. But they're doing lots of changes, big sweeping revamps with each patch. So there's clearly a lot of tinkering that they're still having to do. But I'm having a blast with it. Christian, what is on your playlist this week?
Two games, and I'll start with one, and then the other one is hopefully Jeff, you can answer some questions for me as I spend more time with it. I've really been digging the games of the PlayStation Play, you know, promotion or whatever it is. So first it was Rogue Legacy, and now the Swapper. Did either of you play the Swapper when it was out on PC last year?
I did, yeah.
Did you finish it?
I didn't finish it, no.
I feel like I knew very little about this game. And then I saw the art style and I watched the trailer for it and I was like, that looks awesome. I'm going to Google it. And I was like, oh, it was out on PC almost a year ago. It has like a 95% Metacritic score or something like that. And I was like, okay, I need to play this game. Holy crap. I love the Swapper. And I feel like I listen to and consume enough games media, you know, including PC games. It's not as if I just skip it if it's PC. I mean, I have a PC I can play games on. And for whatever reason, I just missed it. So I feel like now that it's available still on PC, obviously, and also on PS3, PS4, and PSN, I want to yell how fantastic this game is. It's, you know, a side-scroller, looks kind of Metroid-y, but it isn't a Metroid game and you know, upgrading your gear in the same way and re-exploring. But it's kind
more of a puzzle game.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's like Portal in the sense that, you know, a head scratcher, you get this gun where you can create clones of yourself, and then you need to collect orbs to unlock what's going on in this world and get off this space station or whatever. And it's, the music I think is fantastic and subtle, and it has that, captures that loneliness feeling as you're out exploring the maps and the mechanics, you know, there are certain lights. So what you do is you can create clones and then you can zap yourself to that clone so that you, that's the,
which we know
particular,
is unrealistic, because if you could really create clones, you just spend all day making out with yourself. I mean, right.
Well, I mean, you would just, if you've watched any Michael Keaton movie, you know how you handle having clones and then they start
any
sleeping
Michael
next
Keaton
to your
movie?
Wife. Yeah. Because
Mr. Mom,
if you haven't watched Need for Speed, it's a Michael Keaton movie. Check it out.
Because he did one Michael Keaton movie with clones, any Michael Keaton movie will do.
Well, the point is, after he made that movie, you don't know if you're watching a Michael Keaton movie or a Michael Keaton clone movie.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
What they do with all those extra Michael Keatons, we don't know.
Exactly. They're making Need for Speeds. They're locked in a room somewhere.
For Need for Speed, yeah.
Yeah, and they're making RoboCop reboots. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. But so you make clones of yourself, and then when you're not having direct control of that clone, it, you know, mimics what you do. So it will walk and jump when you jump, and it stays the same distance away from you as where it was. So you put it on switches to activate doors and to get places or whatever. And then there are lights that prevent you, like a red light means you can't. Oh, I'm going to get my colors wrong. I'll just say it. There's red lights, pink lights, blue lights, and I think others as you go, but those are what's introduced initially. And they prevent you from making clones in that lit area or swapping into controlling that character. And I love games like this where I feel like it's like Portal in the sense that it makes you feel smart and that you figured out the solution and or you tricked it. Like the first time there's a really long fall, like as you go to make a clone, the world slows down and there's this huge pit and you can see on your map that there's an orb down there and you got to get down there, but you walk off the edge and you die, like you can't survive it. And then I was like, oh, well, it slows down so I can fall, slow down, create a clone at the bottom and then zap over to him and I'm standing on the ground and I won't die. And you're like, yep, just tricked this game. And it's like, oh, no, that's the solution. You know, that's how you do it. Or like Portal, you're like, oh, I can get onto that little ledge. I don't think they know that little ledge. They clearly know that little ledge is there. You're supposed to go to that little ledge. But if
that's
you like
cool
games.
Feeling.
Yeah,
cool
it's feeling. Awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. So I think if you like games like that, check it out. I think it looks great on PS4. It looks okay on Vita. You can definitely tell, you know, a quality drop. But the cross-save functionality has been awesome. You just sync it up to the cloud and bring it back down. I haven't had a problem with that. I love that it's, you know, I think what PlayStation is doing with their cross-buy, cross-save games is smart, and I wish other companies did more of it, namely Nintendo. And so I think if you like that style of game and if you're at all interested in it and you have the $15 or whatever it is to spare, check out the Swapper. I don't think you'll be disappointed. I'm having tons and tons of fun with it. And then my questions for you, Jeff, I'm spending more time with Rogue Legacy, really, really, really liking it still. But how long am I supposed to survive? Remember last week when I said I was going to do that ROM hack and just die to see if I could crash the memory in the game by having too many errors and how many people can it save? I think I'm doing that unintentionally now by just me dying for real. Like, yeah. What the heck, man? How many errors, or is there an average? Like, how long do you live? I'm like, I'm so bad.
Well, you get, the farther you get in the game and the more upgrades you get, the longer you'll live. And then you'll find that you'll want to swap out certain skills for other skills to do specific things. So if it's like, okay, I'm running into the castle now on a gold run, I'm going to make sure I have the class that gets me the maximum amount of gold, and I have the skills that are going to get me the maximum amount of gold. So I'm going to make all the enemies harder to make them drop more gold, and I'm just going to see how long I can survive to get as much gold as I can because I know a specific upgrade that I want. So then you go in, you do that, you use the gold sword that gets you gold, you know, all the things that maximize your gold. There's a, I can't remember the name of the class right now, but the super skinny guy, it's like the spelunker or something that gets you the most gold. Then you know, so you get gold and then you swap out all those skills for survivability. It's like, okay, now I'm making a boss run. I want to maximize all the things that will give me a boss run. Or I know of a secret chest and I know the specific skills I need for that specific chest. So I'm going to choose my heir based on where that chest is, lock down the castle, make sure it doesn't change, get back to that chest and use the specific skills like double jump or triple jump or quadruple jump or sprint or whatever it is to get that secret fairy chest. So you find it, you have to make strategic decisions, but the key is getting those skills, unlocking those chests and getting those skill things, getting items that you can then use strategically to maximize your runs based on what you want out of that specific run.
Yeah, I think I remember when Garnet was playing this game back in the Weekend Confirmed days, and you know you gave pretty much that same breakdown to him, and he was complaining. And now what I'm going to complain? We're just going to have the same conversation again now that I'm going through it. It's like that's all well and good, and I see those unlocks to get, but I can't even survive long enough to get enough gold to unlock those unlocks anymore. Where it's like when things start getting into the 400 gold range or whatever, it's just, don't get me wrong, I'm still having tons of fun playing this game. It's like, oh, I'm going to play one life of Rogue Legacy on my Vita before I go to bed. Okay, 15 lives later, I need to go to bed. Like, I mean, it's fun, and they're complete experiences, and it's, you know, I don't have a problem with the game, but it's just like, man. And then second question, when you beat it, when you finish the game, Mm-hmm. How long did that take, that life? Like, how long is a full run through of the game, or how long was it for you? Do you remember?
Well, you don't. It doesn't work like that. Once you open up other areas, you can just warp to them pretty quick. And once you beat a boss, it stays beat, so you don't have to re-beat that boss. So you get to the point where you're like, I've found a good layout for the castle that I like. I'm locking this down. I'm going for it. I'm beating that boss. And then once you have beat that boss, you can warp to like the more doors open in your castle, so you can, you know, skip to things.
If you beat a boss and then you don't lock down the castle again,
the boss stays beat.
Got it. Okay. I clearly have not made it nearly that far.
And then, you know, you'll get to the point where you're like, I like this version of the castle. I'm locking this down, and I'm going to spend 30 or 40 lives just with this locked down version of the castle, knocking my head against. And you'll be able to warp right to the boss door, and just keep hammering on that boss over and over and over, which is what I would do. Some of the later bosses, I would just hammer on that boss life after life after life after life, getting closer and closer to beating them, because there's some of them are really hard. It's a glorious game that way, though. I don't usually like that, beating my head against the wall, but for some reason with Rogue Legacy, it just clicked in and is best game.
Would you tweak your gear, or would you'd have a gear set up, and then you'd, because I think maybe that's what maybe kept you interested, because you're going back to the boss like, okay, I think I got you. Now I just make this with this, and now I got you.
Yeah, or the three heirs that I can choose from, I haven't been able to choose from those particular ones in fighting this boss. And oh my gosh, this special ability that they have, like the chakram or whatever it's called, the circular thing, powerful and awesome. I love that. I would be like, oh yeah, I got that guy. So now I can use that against this boss or whatever. So it forces you to change up your strategies, but it also allows for new discoveries by dying. So dying is like a benefit, which is really cool.
So quickly, just for listeners, this is a great time to just learn the type of gamer that Jeff and I are in a nutshell. While I really enjoy Rogue Legacy and I plan on sticking with it for a while, I can already say that to me, Shovel Knight is more my type of game. And I know these games are only kind of similar, like whatever, they're not the same game, but just two vaguely similar games. Like, I would take three more Shovel Knights, and if they came out before I touched Rogue Legacy again. And whereas you didn't really scratch the surface of Shovel Knight, and you brought a laptop and a controller with you on a plane to keep playing Rogue Legacy. I think it's, you learn gamers' preferences, and that's kind of our personal split on those. Both great games, our preferences.
Yeah. I have another call I want to get to real quick. 850, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Matthew from Florida. I've been, 2 weekends ago when they did the Evolve beta, I got to play it. I can't really talk about it because of the NDA, other than mention the fact that I played it and Hearthstone.
Yeah. Hearthstone, the Naxxramas stuff has been rolling out. I've been playing a ton of that as well. It's freaking good, man. It's so high quality and so interesting, and keeps you on your toes and changes up that game in such interesting ways. Man, it's so good. Well, it's good they get to play the Evolve beta, because Evolving coming out until February now. So you should get to whet that appetite. Speaking of whetting appetites, I'm looking at the time and I'm noticing, I think it's tabletop time.
Tabletop time. Right now.
Devendra, you're not much of a tabletop gamer, is that right?
Not a huge one. I do have a couple games. The problem is I do not have the people around to like gather and play tabletop games. So every time you guys get to this section, I just sit there and listen and think wistfully about a time when I could like gather with a group of people and play some cool games. Yeah.
Well, I will give you something else to be wistful about, because I finally got my hands on the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Starter Set, which came out mid-July. Yeah, I'm so excited. frequent listeners of the show will know that I'm dungeon mastering a group of dudes, the old TRS gang and some other people. We've been working on a fourth edition campaign for many, many, many weeks. And it's finishing up. And so we're going to jump into fifth edition now that it's fully out and the player's handbook is just about to come out. And in anticipation of that, I read through all of the fifth edition starter set rules, and it's such a high quality product that Wizards has put out with this. I am so impressed. I played the reissue red box starter set of fourth edition way back. I think we actually did a Totally Rad Show episode on it back in the day. And that was when they sort of introduced this concept of the starter set and building in a module, having preset characters, basically having one box that you buy that can bring you into playing Dungeons and Dragons, and you don't have to worry about getting all the rule sets and everything. It's all sort of bundled in. And that was cool, and it really was meant for newbies. It was designed as almost like a choose your own adventure of the first adventure of your group, so that it allowed you to kind of figure out how you wanted your character to be and what you would do from moment to moment. It really held your hand, which is a good thing. This one is far more robust than that. It offers much more than just an initial adventure. It's got a very deep, very dense, very involved set of adventures, multi-session adventures, the big old thick book of just the adventure, and then a separate book for the introduction to the rules. And there are some really key differences in the rule set of fifth edition that I'm really excited about. It's in a lot of ways, we talked about this before. I can't remember which episode it was, but we talked about how it's a throwback to, I may have been when Julian was on. It's a throwback to older versions of D&D. And in a lot of ways it is, especially when compared to fourth edition, because it brings back a lot of the having to prepare ahead of time if you're a mage. It brings back a little of that fiddliness that 4th edition got rid of. 4th edition, one of the things I really liked about it is everything was out in front of you. You had these little boxes that had every action that you could take. And 5th edition does away with that, but offers some more flexibility in how you use your action. You can use it in the middle of moving. So in previous editions, you had to move and then attack, or attack and then move. And now you can do some of your move, attack, do more of your move. So that's interesting. And there's this really cool introduction of, what's the word? I'm just blanking on it. It begins with a P and it means you're good at something. It's awful. I should have it in front of me. Anyway, it's basically a bonus proficiency, your proficiency in things. So it's this standing bonus that you have that applies to a whole manner of different skills. So if you're proficient at long swords, then you get that bonus when you use a long sword. If you're proficient at sneaking, you get that bonus when you sneak. So it streamlines a lot of the weird ways you'd spend points in Dungeons and Dragons, and just says there's one universal bonus that is applied in a number of different ways. And then also it allows the dungeon master to give advantage. So advantage is a new mechanic that says if you are in a situation where you have role played particularly well, the dungeon master will say you have advantage or you have disadvantage. So advantage allows you to roll a die twice and take the better of the two rolls. Disadvantage means you roll a die twice and take the worst of the two rolls. So it's a really cool mechanic that allows for some flexibility in storytelling. And my favorite thing about the new rule set is that each of the characters that you start with, and I assume when you create new characters in the player handbook that will come out later, you add in these attributes that they have, these story beats really, that are part of their backstory that apply in both good and bad ways. So there's like an ideal that they have that they're striving for, but there's also a flaw that they have. And if you role play the flaw, the DM is instructed to give you advantage. So it's a built-in reward system for role playing in situations that might not even be beneficial to you. So if you decide your character is bad at something or has a flaw where if someone acts in a certain way, he gets angry, and it might not even benefit the party for him to behave that way. And yet the player still role plays in that way, still does something that might be counter to your overall goal. Then the dungeon master can reward that interesting role playing behavior with an actual game mechanic boon. And I think that is just so smart of them to reinforce the role playing side of Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, that's, it's like really your cool jam. I mean, that's what you, I feel like that speaks right to you as a dungeon master. You know, like you were talking before about how you, you know, sometimes DMs are like, here's the game. And you're like, figure it out, man. Like, we're playing in real life. We have these improvised moments. Like, let's get into this nitty gritty together. And I feel like this is maybe their way of trying to officially implement that more, or maybe lean more that way for DMs to feel, freedom's not quite the right word, but you know, the experiment more, or go play more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The thing that's so cool about it is that it attacks that thing that I find to be creeping into role-playing games, which is the min-maxing thing, right? Where someone is like, I'm only going to do things that get me closer to victory. And one of the great things about this new rule set in Dungeons & Dragons is that they keep underlining over and over, it's not about winning. It's about having a fun experience. And a fun experience can involve bad things happening. And if you are trying to just make your guy do the coolest thing over and over, it might not make for as fun an experience for the group. So building in this mechanic that says, hey, even doing something that isn't necessarily the best thing to do in the situation, but is consistent with your character, is rewarded. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, oh, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say this, I've played a couple of White Wolf games back in my day as well, like throughout college, and actually never spent that much time with D&D, but this sounds like the flexibility that White Wolf systems often allow. So it's kind of a good thing to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say, it seems like the, you know, who borrowed from whom, probably gaming borrowed from tabletoping. But, you know, it's the games where as you repeatedly use your strongest move as a character, it gives you less XP or does less damage where, yeah, Fierce Punch is the best. But if you sit there and jam it over and over again in like a Ninja Gaiden, your combo score is going to be less. Where, yes, that's your strongest move, but no, you shouldn't use it all the time because we're going to reward you less for it. Or inversely, we're going to reward you more for doing other things that are true to your character, which is what...
Yeah.
You're doing. My question about fifth edition is, I mean, I feel like everyone, like I have another friend that just got it. He got it at Comic-Con. He was so excited he got it. I mean, is the hesitancy in adoption the game's rarity still? Like, I don't understand.
It's just rolling out.
Oh, is it rolling out?
Yeah. So the starter set came out on the 15th and the player's handbook comes out. I think the chat room can probably help me out, but I'm not exactly sure. I think in the next week or so. So the player's handbook is really the rule set. And I know that you can download the basic rules on their site for free this time, which is really cool of them offering it up as a PDF. But what the rule set really is the player's handbook, and that isn't quite out yet.
So that seems weird to me too, then, where, you know, the game, is this, maybe it's just the hype's been building, because this was announced like, what, in 2012? Is that right?
Oh yeah, and they've been beta testing it for a long time, and Gen Con is really when it'll roll out in a big way. Then after that, they'll have release as they do. They'll release adventures, they'll release updates to the rules, they'll release supplementary rules where, oh, now you can play as these other five classes, and there's all these new monsters, and there's all these new scenarios. So, that's kind of how they do it. They roll it out over a period of time. But yeah, it's been in development for a long time and they've been beta testing it for literally years, which is cool.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Looks like the guru in the chat says that a handbook should be out on the 19th.
Right. Gen Con release, which is really cool. I cannot wait. I think it's really interesting. In a lot of ways, I really liked 4th edition. A lot of people didn't. But this definitely harkens back to an older playstyle for D&D, and I just think that Wizards is treating this like such a huge release. I can't wait to see the adventures that they're going to come out with, and based on this introductory adventure, which is so much bigger and more interesting than any other introductory adventure that they've put out, I'm very excited by that. And I'll do a session of this as well, and I'll talk about it on the show if people are interested. I haven't done that yet. I've just been reading it, and it's exciting.
Yeah, cool. Awesome.
Very cool. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode, fellas. This has been a really good one. Thank you so much, Devendra, for hanging out with us and lending your expertise to the proceedings.
No problem, guys. Glad to be here. I also wanted to say something quickly about the Sierra Games thing. This reminds me of that Simpsons joke, right? Remember Alf? He's back in pod form. That's what I'm going to leave you guys with.
I love it. That makes me think of, just as a quick little tangential, did you guys see this crazy Simpsons World app that was announced?
Sounds amazing.
Amazing. Tell the people about it, Devendra.
It is, I haven't looked up the full details, but it's basically, I guess, the equivalent to like that WWE service that just launched that gives you access to pretty much all the Simpsons episodes ever for, I think, a subscription fee. It sounds amazing because I think, at least where I am, they don't really show the old Simpsons episode reruns anymore. So I'm thinking like seasons 1 through 10. I've actually started buying a lot of those on iTunes just so I can like watch them whenever I want. But this sounds amazing. I hope it takes off.
Yeah, and it's even better than that. It's not only every episode, which it is. You get to see every episode, and evidently they're even working on getting the old Tracy Ullman shorts as part of this. So it's every single episode of 25 years of The Simpsons, but also searchable. So you can go, hey, when did I'm looking for a Simpsons quote on politics, and it'll like show all the times the Simpsons have talked about politics or clips, or it'll be like, I want to know every time Sideshow Mel was on the show, and it'll pull up all the episodes with Sideshow Mel. Like, it's a complete database of the Simpsons. The
Simpsons meets big data. Yeah.
It's crazy. Anyway, I'm very excited about that as well. Evidently, producer Zach is telling me that it's not, you have to be subscribed to FXX, the FXX network via your cable provider to have access to it. So it's free, not really.
I'm sure like if that is ever successful or if they see people jumping on that, like I would pay $5 a month for that, you know, or something.
Yeah, man, that's pretty crazy. As a Simpsons fan who, I consider myself a huge Simpsons fan, and yet I haven't watched a single new episode of The Simpsons in probably 7 years.
No, that shows you you're a good Simpsons fan, yeah. You like the good stuff, right?
Well, is it bad now? I don't even know. Is it bad?
It's hit or miss. I've seen some of the newer stuff. It's okay. It's just, it's not the same. And what I grew up watching, you know, during the 90s was this amazing show with humor that, I don't know, that there are a lot of Simpsons episodes I haven't seen in like maybe 15 or 20 years, and yet I'll still remember the flow of the story, all the gags and all the jokes. And
if
that's a rare thing.
Simpsons fans in LA, friends of mine, Kyle Clark, John Ungaro, and Adam Murray run a Simpsons trivia show and fan show at Nerd Melt here in LA called Stonecutters LA, and it's trivia and screenings, and it's free, so it's easy to plug. And they've had amazing guests. Groening's been there. David X. Cohen, I think, is coming back again. He's been a couple of times. So if you're in LA and that interests you, I don't know if it's like the second Saturday of the month or something like that, but it's Saturdays at 4 p.m. usually, and it's Stonecutters LA at Nerd Melt. And it's crazy, the advantage of being in LA, the type of people. Like the first time, I think Groening was just buying comics and was like, oh, I have heard about your show. This is amazing. Can I come talk to everybody? And they were like, yes. Wow. And then he stayed afterwards.
We're not worthy. Yeah.
And he did signings and drawings. Anyway, I can't guarantee it'll be that when you show up, but if you're a Simpsons fan, it's pretty incredible what they're able to do at the show.
Awesome. Devendra, tell the people where they can see your awesome stuff.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Devendra. I podcast about movies and TV with Jeff at /film.com. I also do a Legend of Korra podcast at republiccitydispatch.com, which is an amazing show. And I write about tech at venturebeat.com.
Yeah. If you're not listening to his Legend of Korra show, you definitely should. It's awesome. The show is awesome, but the show about the show is equally awesome. And come listen to us talk about movies on the Slash Filmcast. Christian, what about you? What's going on?
Well, a quick plug for the Slash Filmcast. You guys all love turtles.
No, I tapped out of that one, and I'm very glad I did.
Yeah. Victor was the only smart one. He's the only smart one who didn't even...
Like, nope.
So you're the Donatello of the bunch?
I always was. Originally. I love Donatello.
Not the current Donatello, who's just purple. Anyway, this Thursday is my show Improv versus Stand-Up at UCB here in Los Angeles. If you're in New York and you're listening to this live or, you know, Tuesday, we do Improv versus Stand-Up out there in New York as well at UCB East, and that this August show is Tuesday, and it's hosted, when we're not out there, it's hosted by friend and awesome funny comic Boris Hyken. So that's Tuesday at UCB East. And then my show here is Thursday at UCB Los Angeles at 8 p.m. And it's two amazing improvisers, Seth Morris and Charlie Sanders. Seth is phenomenal, and it's not exaggeration to call him a legend. And Charlie, you might not know as intimately as a fan of improv per se, but he's currently writing for Key and Peele and just an absolutely amazing performer. And then the stand-ups are Joe Wangert, who just had his half-hour Comedy Central special come on last month, and Barry Rothbart, who's done The Tonight Show and Letterman. And it was also one of the really funny, one of the really funny jerks in The Office in Wolf of Wall Street. So I'm really excited about that. That's Thursday at 8. And then the 19th is my, the next recording / live stand-up show, What's New, over at Nerd Melt. And Dan St. Germain is going to be headlining, which I'm super excited about. He's been on At Midnight, Fallon, Conan. He had a half-hour Comedy Central special as well. And that's the 19th at 9 p.m. here in Los Angeles. And if you're not here, you can listen to it as a podcast. It's What's New with Christian Spicer, and it's part of the Nerdist Podcast Network. Jeff, my question to you, in addition to cranking out more amazing concerns episodes, when is the next time I get to watch a YouTube NLB mini of Jeff Cannata loving a movie again? I miss you loving movies.
Well, there has to be more movies to love out
you
there.
You love Guardians, and then it's an island of to itself, unto its own right now.
Well, I love Apes. Apes, come on.
Apes was great. Yeah, Apes was great. It's been a few weeks since Apes happened, but yeah. Hopefully there'll be lots of movies. Devendra evidently is telling me that, what is it, the only the one I love? What is that called?
The one I love, I think.
Oh, the one I love. You said that was great, right?
I actually haven't seen that yet, but... I was thinking of Only Lovers Left Alive, which is coming out on Blu-ray in a couple of weeks. And yeah, it is fantastic, guys.
Yeah. Oh, so hopefully there'll be something. But yes, hope people will check out We Have Concerns over at wehaveconcerns.com or on iTunes. And thank you for listening to this show. And if you are digging what we're doing here, why not tell a friend about DLC or tell a stranger by reviewing us on iTunes? That's always helpful. We appreciate that. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Monday to talk all about Gamescom and more. So until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Apartment People, champion, the trusted name in Columbus Living, brings you The District of Berkshire.
Man, it would be fun to live there, right by Tanger Outlet Malls. Oh my God, great location too, getting to and from Columbus, and a great deal right now.
Free rent until next year. Free rent until next year.
He ain't lying. Move in now. You don't pay rent until next year.
The District at Berkshire. Available now at livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com when you need a company you can trust.